What a joy it has been to worship with you today. As we continue today, I just want to remind you about the long arc we've been taking in worship since February. Since the beginning of the season of Lent on Ash Wednesday, we've been on this collision course. And 6 weeks and 6 days ago, we stepped, I said, into a collider with human darkness on one side and Christ's self-giving love on the other. And there's been 6 weeks of acceleration toward each other, shadow and night and noon and glare and tomb and eclipse. And then on Thursday night, Maundy Thursday, in this room, we watched 6 candles go out. One for each of the darknesses that we named during the season. There was no benediction, there was no resolution, there was just silence in the walk to the parking lot. Saturday held nothing, and that was on purpose. We did nothing because today, after that long wait on Saturday, that collision finally has an answer, or it has a new chapter. And so as we reflect together on the significance of what it is we celebrate today, as we turn to Matthew's Gospel, chapter 28, and as we read those words together, I want you to hang on to 3 big ideas. They're fairly straightforward, so you can put them in your head. If you like to write things down, you can. The first big idea is this: the light did not wait. The second is this: the tomb could not hold what God was doing. And the third is this: he's already in Galilee. That the risen Christ doesn't stay in that moment of triumph, but moves back into the ordinary life and says, "Meet me there." And so those are the 3. Let's hear Matthew's Gospel, verses 1 through 10, chapter 28, and hopefully you'll begin to hear what I'm trying to communicate. After the Sabbath, Matthew writes, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here, he's risen. Just as he said, come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you." So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Don't be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." May God bless the reading and the hearing of the word today. And let's return to that first thought. The light did not wait. The light didn't wait for those Marys to arrive. The light didn't wait for the Marys to be ready. In fact, when John tells the story of Jesus' resurrection, he tells how Mary Magdalene set out for the tomb while it was still dark. While it was still dark. Because that's the time when grief gets you out of bed. It was just a few days before, on Friday. At noon, the sky had gone wrong. Inky, opaque, undone, dark, Matthew says, shrouded with darkness. And the Marys, as many of us have experienced, were living inside that darkness kind of ever since. For the last 2 days, it had grown darker. The darkness of that sealed stone, the Roman guard who declared everything was finished. So you may know how people like Mary Magdalene felt when I say she fell asleep in the dark and she woke up in the dark. And this morning, as they make their way to the tomb to look at the tomb of Jesus, they walked before the sun arrived while it was still dark. And Matthew tells us about their arrival, that she and the other Mary arrive at that moment when the sky is beginning to become light, but you don't see the sun just yet. The sun's face hasn't shown itself, and so it's not really darkness anymore, but it's not yet day. It's that little seam in between. Sometimes compare this moment in the day to something else, a powerful moment you've probably experienced yourself. If you've ever stood at the edge of the ocean and you've watched a wave come in, when the ocean starts to pull everything into itself and accumulates and rises to that full height, and there's that one suspended moment when the crest hasn't broken, but it's inevitable. The outcome is now completely certain. Its breaking is upon us, though we can't quite see it yet. When the water is on top of itself, and nothing in the universe is going to stop what happens next. That is where these women are when they arrive at the tomb. And the light of the announcement would be their daybreak. But before that happens, they arrive and find things were not as they left them. It's like a theater set that's halfway broken down and halfway built up for something new. The resurrection has happened. The earth had shaken. The stone rolled away. Soldiers collapsed. And a messenger from God, indescribably powerful, charged, says Matthew, like lightning, is there to deliver a message that cascades over them. Like that wave that crashes on the shore, like a bolt of lightning that strikes the earth, like the sun that rises over the horizon, and the inky, murky change is now transformed by that single strong line on the horizon that we call daybreak. It's upon them. But that light did not wait for their faith. The light didn't wait for the sun to come out. The light didn't wait for the powerful people of Jerusalem to wake up. It didn't wait for the disciples to believe. It didn't wait for Rome to fall or for the geopolitical situation to resolve. It broke while grief was still fresh, while the guards were still at their post, and nothing had been resolved. Their hope arrives without waiting for the right conditions. And I think the only hope that's worth holding is that kind of hope. It doesn't wait for everything to be okay before it arrives and before it becomes a part of our spirit in our way. And there in that place of unmaking, of remaking, of confusion, of darkness being transformed into light, the angel delivers the words that gather us in this space today as we worship. He is not here. He has risen as he said. As he said. Three times. In this season, Jesus had predicted this in Matthew's gospel, exactly this, and no one believed it. And I think it's easy for us to judge as readers of the story who kind of fancy ourselves to be more put together than those disciples, that they just didn't understand the stories. We understand them completely. But I have grown more and more convinced that the resurrection is not something that you can sort of extrapolate from any logical understanding of our experience in our world. If we add together all of the stories and all of the experiences and all of the learning that we know, we're still not going to be able to add them together and say, well, of course, the resurrection is the only inevitable outcome. That announcement, Scripture tells us, always has to come from the outside, because it is God's work and not ours. And when it comes to us in a way that we can understand, and Sean, how beautifully you articulated the way you have experienced the resurrection, the whole new creation wrought by what God has done in raising Jesus from the dead. Then we have heard from God. That announcement came to the women. It came before dawn, before the other disciples, before anyone in power heard a single word. The only people who noticed something was different was the guards. Rome had kept their finest and dispatched a few to make sure that tomb stayed sealed. It was the most secured little institution in the whole story. And those who guarded the status quo, those who guarded the inevitability of Jesus' death, they're terrified, helpless, paralyzed on the ground, even before those women arrive. They become like dead men, Matthew says, as life emerges. And that empire that killed Jesus was not able to hold back what God was doing. And Matthew says that the women left that place hurriedly. They hurried away from the tomb, he says, afraid, yet filled with joy. Fear and joy together. Running down the road, carrying this one big emotion that has two names. And I think that's the honest way of understanding how Easter's message goes to work in us. It's too large, and it's too disruptive, and it's too real for us simply to be cheerful and high-five one another and say, oh, lucky us. Easter's joy, the good news that God has triumphed over death, and that in trusting what God has done and is doing and will do in Jesus, that we can experience and participate in the ongoing life of God is nothing short of extraordinary. And in our hardest times, if there's one thread we can hang on to, it might be that. And if it's true, it means there's a lot we need to change and work on and apply ourselves to right now. That's enough to make me tremble. You know, we could stop there. But that's the first thing I want us to hang on to. The light didn't wait for us to be ready. The second thing I want us to consider is that the tomb could not hold what God was doing. As I said, on Thursday, we saw six candles go out, one by one. One for each moment of darkness that we've named across this season. And Easter speaks to and pushes back, overrules, overrides, and overturns each one of those darknesses. He took our appetite. He took it into the wilderness, and he refused every shortcut to nourishment and sustenance. And he left appetite and its power over us in his grave. He took our hesitation, our waiting for the perfect time, our moving and meandering so slowly, lacking a responsiveness and a boldness that would meet with Jesus in the daytime. He took all that into the dark when he met Nicodemus, and he managed his own faith with patience and with grace. And he left hesitation's grip on us in the tomb. He took our shame, and he met it in the well at noontime. And there, instead of weaponizing it, he named it and met it with compassion, and he welcomed a woman he had no business knowing into his fellowship, and she, charged with that good news, went back and told the good news to her whole village. And he left shame's grip in the grave. He took all the certainty that we have that sometimes blinds us to the truth God is revealing, and he met it at the pool at Siloam. And when they demanded proof, he gave them mud. And he left all of certainty's blindness in the tomb. He met our sealed grief in Bethany. And he wept with his friends and for his friend as he acted. And he called out into the stink of 4 days dead and asked for life to emerge. And grief's claim on them and us was left finally in his grave. All the violence of Golgotha, he absorbed it. He didn't return it. He prayed, Father, forgive them. And he left the inevitability of our violence to each other and against this whole creation. Violence does not have the last word, nor does power, as the world reckons it. He left it in his grave. That cross was the point of that great collision. Every darkness he exhausted with his power, and he died with it, buried it in his tomb, and left it behind. On the third day, he walked out carrying nothing that belonged to death, only those things that belonged to life. The tomb is about Saturday. That Saturday experience after Good Friday and its terror, and before Easter Sunday with its joyful fear. We all know a little bit about what Saturday feels like. If you've ever raised a child and you poured in everything you had, but the outcome is still not clear and you don't know how everything's going to go, or if you loved a marriage and it asked more of you than you knew how to give, when you gave yourself to a friendship or to a calling, to a church, and somewhere in the middle of it, you realized you're still being formed, still being asked to grow in ways that you didn't choose, and you're still waiting on those things that you prayed in faith for to come to pass, and you prayed with real faith, but you haven't yet received them. That gap between what we hope for and what we hold right now, that's Saturday. That's the season that sometimes goes a lot longer than we planned. And it's the version of ourselves that we thought we'd be over by now. I know that gap. I'll be honest. Ministry always has this way of outpacing your competence. Just when you think you've caught up with it, every time you think you have something settled, something's going to shift and you realize you're still a student. That's Saturday. That's real. And it's not a sign that your faith has failed if you find yourself there. What do you do with it? Well, you have some choices, I guess. You can abandon your loves. You can walk away from the marriage or from the child, the calling, the church, the friendship. Some people do that. You can also try and force a particular outcome. You can try and manage and control and manufacture the ending that you need so desperately. And some people do that too. But there's another way, and it's the way that we see today. Get up while it's still dark. Go to the tomb and trust that love moves first. Sometimes your certainty will follow, and it may be a little delayed. But faith is not knowing the loneliness or the languishing of Saturday. Faith is determined by what we do inside all of our Saturdays. Faith is getting up while it's still dark because the tomb cannot hold what God is doing. Third, he's already in Galilee. Go and tell my brothers, he said, to go to Galilee. There they will see me. And I think that's the most important message for us in our daily living. For you pragmatic people out there, what does this mean for me on Monday? It's this verse. We skip over it fastest sometimes, and we might not see that the risen Christ doesn't stay at the tomb. And he doesn't ask the women to build an altar and enshrine the moment. He moves. He goes back to Galilee, back to where the disciples came from, back to the lake and the boats and the ordinary life. And he says, meet me there. Galilee is Durham. It's Hillsboro. It's Charlotte. It's wherever you spend your days. It's your kitchen table. It's Monday morning. Galilee is that marriage you're still working on. Galilee is that child you're praying for. Galilee is that calling you're still trying to figure out. The risen Christ is already there. He's on the road. He's moving forward. And he's saying, come and find me in your ordinary life. And so the resurrection for us, as it was for these women, is that commissioning back into the world. And so as we hold on with fear and joy to all that we celebrated this morning in worship, that's what I want you to carry out the door. First is that the light will not wait. It breaks upon us before we're ready. It broke upon them before they were ready, before Rome fell, before the disciples believed, while it was still dark. And that's the kind of hope that the resurrection offers. It's a hope that arrives without waiting for all the conditions to be just right. The second thing I want you to carry out with you is that awareness that the tomb cannot hold what God is doing. Every sealed thing in your life that you may have named over the last few weeks met its match at Jesus' cross. And he has exhausted every one of those darknesses. He carried it into his tomb, dying with it. And he emerged from that tomb carrying life. God has the last word on everything that feels sealed and final for us. God always does. And the third is this. He's already in Galilee. And so your faith is going to be known by getting up while it's still dark and walking toward where he said he would be. Because the wave has crested. That new day is breaking. And God begins the work in the dark, even while we're still finding our footing. And so when we open the doors of this church and we prepare to leave this place, if you have never given your life to this one who walked out of the tomb, today might be that day. The risen one who came as he chose, who got up first, is already on the road. And if you've made a decision to follow him on that road, but you've never made it public, today may be that day to make it known. The waters of baptism are always ready. If you're ready to call Yates your church home, we want to walk this resurrection life with you because he is risen. And the light that we have been following this whole season to Easter, that's the same light that is now healing us. Though the exposure is sometimes uncomfortable, the collision that felt like an ending is truly our new beginning. The tomb that held death now holds nothing but glory. He is risen. He's risen indeed. Amen.